Hello? It's working. Okay. Something was wrong. I was on the wrong mic. And now I think I'm okay. Hello? 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 There it is. Oh, sorry. I was getting the wrong mic and I was mixed up. Like, my life is always mixed up, so I couldn't get on. I'm very much apologized. There was some dead air there. Dead air. I guess it's called dead air. So what's happening in astronomy? Well, there's always something happening in astronomy. And I think we need astronomy now because we have to get people off this earth. There's just too many people on this earth. The traffic is terrible. Getting here takes twice as long as it used to. So that's one reason to explore outer space so we can get people off the earth. So right now it's close to the winter solstice, and it's going to be the shortest day of the year on the 21st, which is Saturday. So the after Saturday, so Sunday, progressively days will start to get slowly longer, and right now the days are still getting shorter. So every day now there's a couple of minutes, and you can see when you look up in the sky the sun is not very high, so that's what happens too. And it will start to change soon. So December 21st, I don't know exactly what day, the Earth will, it's on its maximum tilt for us in the Northern Hemisphere anyway. So as we speak, it is the 19th. So for the next 2 days, our days will get shorter. And starting on the 22nd, they'll start to get longer. So again, if you notice in the sky, when you look up in the sky when the sun's out, then you can see that the sun is very low. I still haven't figured it out in terms of the moon and the sun, where they should be at certain times of year, but maybe I'll do that one. So today I'm looking at livescience.com, and you know what? There's Mars happy. There's like more than half of the things I see so far are about Mars. And I guess NASA's got the most rovers on Mars. It's the most studied planet so far after Earth. So there's something going on there. There's some stuff about the moon too, and about Jupiter. So I'm going to start with everybody's favorite topic, which is space-time. So what is space-time? So this is an article on livescience.com. It says, what is space-time? It was written 7 hours ago by Adam Mann, M-A-N-N. And again, the article's name is What is Space-Time? So it's livescience.com/space-time.html. So as we get into this mind-bending world of Einstein's, where you got to bend your mind to kind of think these things through, then you get there when you think about space-time. So what exactly is space-time? I guess it was called the fabric of space-time. So in a way, we would think, okay, the air, a space around us, is empty. And that could be, that is furthest from the truth. Space is full of, what do you call it, violent interactions all the time, and we just don't know it. So apparently, to satisfy some kind of quantum theories, particles pop in and out of existence all the time around us. There's lots of neutrinos going through space, through me, through you, through your thumb. Every second, there's billions of neutrinos going through you. There are electric, probably magnetic fields everywhere. There's all kinds of molecules interacting. There's weird stuff that I don't even know about. And it's not bad stuff. It's just that it's in the realm of physics where the PhDs know about this stuff. So what is space-time? And that's one of the things about Einstein's theory of relativity, or gravitation, let's say gravitation. Apparently, matter bends space, and then space tells matter how to move. So if you have a heavy object like the sun or the earth, the space around it is bent like a bowling ball that is put in the middle of a trampoline, so that any object traveling close to that bowling ball will travel the path that the bowling ball has bent. So it's bent the fabric of the trampoline, so we can imagine that's the fabric of space-time. So the ball, when it goes close, it will travel along that bent fabric. It won't travel in a straight line. So in a way, we can say the shortest distance between two objects is not a straight line. Sometimes it's a bent line. So now I'm going to read about the fabric of space-time before I botch this up so much that no one will understand what it means. So here's a nice picture, and it says, space-time is the conceptual model that best explains how the universe works. Interesting. Okay. So here I go. I'm going to read it. The fabric of space-time is a conceptual model combining the three dimensions of space with the fourth dimension of time. According to the best of current physics theories, space-time explains the unusual relativistic effects that arise from traveling near the speed of light, as well as the motion of massive objects in the universe. So if you're traveling, let's say, if you say, okay, I want to go to a black hole. So this Christmas, you're not going to go to your parents' house. You're going to travel to a black hole. And your parents are going to be sad because you're not coming to their house. And they got a telescope that can see you. So as you're traveling to the black hole, they're seeing weird things. They're seeing you go slower and slower. And also you're being stretched thinner and thinner and longer and longer. But you don't feel the effect of time in that frame. You're in the frame where you're in your own frame of reference. When you look back to your parents, you think, wow, their space is traveling, or their time is traveling faster. So here we are, we're falling into a black hole, and Einstein told us what happens, I guess, and he tells us what happens just generally in terms of gravity and how, for example, gravity works in Einstein's theories, not in Newton's theories. So they explained the deviation of Mercury. There was some unexplained part of its orbit, and Einstein explained it, or Einstein's theory explained it. So let's read on before I make a complete mess of this. Here we go. The fabric of space-time is a conceptual model combining the three dimension of space with the four dimension of time. According to the best of current physical theories, space-time explains the unusual relativistic effects that arise from traveling near the speed of light, as well as the motion of massive objects in the universe. So, who discovered space-time? The famous physicist Albert Einstein helped develop the idea of space-time as part of his theory of relativity. Prior to his pioneering work, scientists had two separate theories to explain physical phenomena. Isaac Newton's laws of physics described the motion of massive objects, while James Clerk Maxwell's electromagnetic models explain the properties of light. So, but experiments conducted at the end of the 19th century suggested that there was something special about light. This is what I read about light, or I understand about light. So, for example, if someone stands very far from you and they flash your flashlight at you, so there, that beam of light travels to you at the speed of light, and then you flash your flashlight at them at the same time, so your light travels towards them at the speed of light. So you would think that the two beams of light are traveling towards each other at the speed of light, so their relative speed to each other is 2 times the speed of light, but it's not. It's still the speed of light. So nothing can go faster than the speed of light. So if you're flashing a light at somebody and they're flashing a light at you, the lights don't approach each other at 2 times the speed of light. They approach each other at the speed of light. So other things change. The speed of light stays constant, but other things change. So I'll read more about it, and maybe they can explain it. So experiments proved that there was something special about light. Measurements showed that light always traveled at the same speed, no matter what. So if I flash my flashlight at you at half the speed of light, if I could do that, and you flashed your flashlight at me at the speed of light, the two beams would still be going towards each other at the speed of light, not our logical thinking at 1.5 times the speed of light, if you get me. Okay, and in 1898, the French physicist and mathematician Henri Poincaré speculated that the velocity of light must be an unsurpassable limit around the same time. I don't know what that means, unsurpassable limit. Maybe it's constant. It never goes higher than a certain amount. Around that same time, other researchers were considering the possibility that objects change in size and mass depending on their speed. So there's certain things that change. So, for example, if somebody travels away from Earth at the speed of light or at a fraction of the speed of light, they come back. They're in their reference frame. They're, for some reason, their time goes slower and our time goes faster. So if you had a twin brother or sister that traveled away from Earth at 0.9 the speed of light, if they came back in 2 years, according to their time frame, Earth would have aged much, much more. So certain things that we thought were static, did not change, do change. So for example, time, length, size, mass, all these things will change when things are traveling at the speed of light. Depends on the reference frame you're working on or what you're viewing the object from. So Einstein pulled up all these together, these theories together, in the 1905 theory of special relativity, which postulated that the speed of light was a constant. For this to be true, space and time had to be combined into a single framework that conspired to keep light speed the same for all observers. So I guess, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Let's say if you're on a rocket ship traveling away from Earth at the speed of light, half the speed of light, then someone shines a beam towards your direction. So you're going half the speed of light. The beam is going the speed of light. And when it passes you, it will still be moving away from you at the speed of light, even though you are moving at half the speed of light, something like that. And other things change, like time, length, mass, whatever. So for this to be true, space and time had to be combined. So a person in a super fast rocket will measure time to be moving slower and the length of objects to be shorter compared with a person traveling at a much slower speed. That's because space and time are relative. They depend on an observer's speed, but the speed of light is more fundamental than either. So I guess also here's another way to put it. Let's say you go to you go to the tallest building in the world. I think it's called Burj Dubai. It's 2,500 feet, which is maybe 700 or 800 meters. When you measure the time on the bottom floor as opposed to time on the top floor, the time on the bottom will differ slightly than the time on the top. So all these things to do with gravity and traveling at the speed of light changes things about time, about space, about space-time, and again, lots of what you observe depends on your frame of reference. So if you're in a super fast rocket, and it says a person in a super fast rocket will measure time to be moving slower and the length of objects to be shorter compared with a person traveling at a much slower speed. Now, I don't agree with that, because what I thought was this. The person that's traveling fast, his rocket will be the same length to him. His watch will move at the same time. But another person observing this person, that either is sitting still on the Earth or the person is in a much slower rocket, they will observe the person in the faster rocket. If they could see that person's clock, the clock will be moving slower. And if the person in the fast rocket moves back or looks back at Earth, or the person in the slow rocket, they will observe that person's rocket or time to be moving faster. So I think what happens, it says here, a person in a super fast rocket will measure time to be moving slower. I think that's what I thought. I thought that person will measure everything normal to that person, but another person in another reference frame will measure things differently when they're looking at that person in their reference frame. So they're looking from another reference frame that's moving at a distance, a different speed, or just standing still. So that's because space and time are relative. They depend on observer speed, but the speed of light is more fundamental than either. The conclusion that space-time is a single fabric wasn't one that Einstein reached by himself. The idea came from German mathematician Hermann Minkowski, who said in a 1908 colloquium, "Henceforth, space by its time and space by itself and time by itself are doomed to fade away into mere shadows, and only a kind of union of the two will preserve an independent reality." End quote. So I believe Einstein worked. It could have been Minkowski, but I do believe Einstein worked with mathematicians, or one mathematician, so on how to learn the math for the geometry of space-time. So Einstein had to study a lot of math before he could formulate his theories. So the space-time he described is still known as Minkowski space-time and serves as the backdrop of calculations in both relativity and quantum field theory. The latter describes the dynamic of subatomic particles. So that is quantum field theory. So it describes the dynamics of subatomic particles as fields, according to astrophysicist and science writer Ethan Siegel. So a lot of physics and astronomy is really mind-bending stuff. You got to bend your mind to get it around it. And I guess Einstein was the ultimate mind bender. So he could bend his mind to think, do these thought experiments, which were just, mind-bending, right? They were incredible. So here's how space-time works. Nowadays, when people talk about space-time, they often describe it as resembling a sheet of rubber. This, too, comes from Einstein, who realized as he developed his theory of general relativity that the force of gravity was due to curves in the fabric of space-time. So things travel on those curves of space-time because something has bent space-time, like a massive object. So when you approach that, then it will just, your small object will travel along that curve, along that sheet of rubber, like a trampoline, that what a bowling ball is dropped in the middle, right close to the middle, all the fabric of the trampoline, let's call that space-time, that is bent. So if you throw a rubber ball in there, it's going to roll along that curved surface. Massive objects like the Earth, Sun, or you, really, create distortions. So I am creating the distortion in space-time. I thought I only created distortions in other people's lives. But anyway, massive objects like the Earth, Sun, or you could create distortions in space-time that cause it to bend. And of course, if you have a smaller object, it bends space-time less. These curves, in turn, constrict the ways in which everything in the universe moves, because objects have to follow paths along this warped curvature. Motion due to gravity is actually motion along the twists and turns of space-time. A NASA mission there, mission got me all worked up, mission called Gravity Probe GP-B measured the shape of the space-time vortex around the Earth in 2011 and found that it closely accords with Einstein's predictions. But much of this remains difficult for most people to wrap their heads around. Although we can discuss space-time as being similar to a sheet of rubber, the analogy eventually breaks down. A rubber sheet is two-dimensional, while space-time is four-dimensional. It's just not warps in space-time that the sheet represents, but also warps in time. The complex equations used to account for all of this are tricky for even physicists to work with. So I think in one of my classes many years ago, I might be not 100% correct in this, but I thought some physicists said, one of the professors, so I'll blame a professor, of course, that there are actually 10 dimensions in quantum mechanics, and on an Earth, only 3 of the dimensions have uncurled themselves. So there's other dimensions that haven't uncurled themselves. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's something I recall. And of course, I'm blaming one of you professors in the physics department. So it's not my fault if that's wrong. It's your fault. You taught me the wrong thing. Okay, so let's look at what astrophysicist Paul Sutter said, and quote, Einstein made a beautiful machine, but he didn't exactly leave us a user's manual. Just to drive home the point, general relativity is so complex that when someone discovers a solution to the equations, they get a solution named after them and become semi-legendary in their own right. So even some of the, like when I tutor some physics or stuff, and they're really trying to challenge these kids, so of course they give them some hard question, and I look at it and I'm thinking, wow, is that tough, like physics 12, which I should know, and I have to really bend my mind to kind of solve the problem. Some of these problems are pretty straightforward, but of course some of them are mind-bending. And there's lots of, I guess I was told, let's say chemistry has more exceptions to the rule than physics. So you might have a rule, and then you have an exception to the rule, and then you might have another exception to the rule. And that's why someone told me they didn't study chemistry, because there were too many exceptions to the rules. Where physics, I guess it's pretty down pat. Once you got something, then that's it. That's the theory. But some of these physics theories, you can't wrap your mind around it. Only these people in that building over there in physics know how to wrap their mind around it. So I'm going to go for a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about space-time. But space-time is pretty cool. And imagine in the future, if we learn about space-time, how to use it, how to utilize it. We don't know what we're going to be able to do in the future. So with these gravitational waves, with space-time, the future is totally mind-bending. And isn't that cool? Because when we bend our mind and understand it, maybe we can use it, and we can find where Mork's home planet, Nanu Nanu. We can go to Nanu Nanu and find where Mork lives. Maybe we can go through a wormhole. So anyway, I'm talking about space-time. I'm trying to be serious. I don't know if I'm coming across as serious. But anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk more about space-time, which is kind of cool because, you know, it's mind-bending. So thank you for listening. I'm going for a break now.
The super won a trip to the P now. While I settle off the shores of the Long Island, my father's clean, I mean my mind is clear when I transmit. I am the man of the family cause the pants fit. I want to let forensics prove that I commence grew with the thread from leader while the hate. Wanna say salutation to the nation of the Nubians. We about to place it in that 3 feet of stew again. I got the frequency to shatter Mr. Jones' perm. I got a hail of other honeys cause it's short term. Valley and a storm for the shoddy in the jacket. For the brother, he's a nigga when he packs it. So get your butt out the sling. I start Muhammad floating up. That means the death. So like the autograph.
Hello, this is Marco, and you are listening to Astro Talk with De La Soul and Marco Me, astronomer on CITR 101.9.
Weigh the 18 mil, even still, sack a bag of troubles, make a single double, loop the coin and join the minimum wage. I had a plan if I was the man, I'd project, lay it low and leg mad cassettes. I uncondition my ways of the everyday sunset, waging my days to the one bet, cause your breaks, I have the capital cakes, weather mine, out of line, I'm busy till the early morning. Freak the wick call, I get a tap on my shoulder, cause the days of the breaks be just about over. The arts of the six won't play my bag. I got the sevens in my pocket somewhere. Reasons for the cheer or temperature here. I keep it to the rear and then I'm exploding.
I be the fabulous, but see, unlike the G, I got the flea up in the name. Kenova been my cousin from the Peter Pipe. Unlike the others, latching on the wind, I caught the fame. Pass the task to ask me about the native tongue again. My friend, I tell you, Jungle Brothers on the run. I've shaken hands with many devils in the industry. Believe the genesis, life it will me that I'm deaf. Like the autograph, I sign until the break.
I'm not afraid to Due to the long, I laid the anchor in the veil. And how I relate, I stay inside of my dates. Take days, mess up my mind. Ground 0 degrees, and the weather feels fine. You open my eyes, man. Thought I had a man, but how could I scan? I wasn't around. I seen the states and played the dates in the far, far. Gathered the news from the zoos around. Grew old with Mikey Rhodes and played the codes. Sometimes I don't budge without my cuz buzz. A super high, you do. I check it from my friends and my.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skahuya, Talitin, who Musqueam stay.
This is Marco, and you're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Nelly and Kelly Rowland. Everything, the St. Louis thing with Nelly on CITR 101.9's AstroTalk.
What's it gonna be? She said,
you don't know what you mean to me.
When I was in Japan in 2002, I brought some VCR tapes, and I had one of my favorite ones was the Nelly one. Let's see if I'm on the right one. There we go. Sorry. So when I was in Japan in 2002, I brought my VCR tapes, and the Nelly video was on it. I'd watch it all the time. So welcome back. We're talking about space-time. So space-time is a mind-bending thing. It's hard to understand. Like a lot of things are hard to understand in physics, like they bend your mind, and they bend space, too. So, here's an article I'll read a bit later. It says, related, ripples in space-time could reveal the shape of wormholes. Now, that is cool. That was in vogue many years ago, quite a few years ago. Now, people don't talk about wormholes much anymore. And they say there's some exotic particle you need to open a wormhole. Anyway, we might get to that. But anyway, here is a three-dimensional picture. So again, this is an article on space-time from livescience.com. It says, what is space-time? By Adam Mann, M-A-N-N, and it was 7 hours ago, and it's a simple explanation of space-time, as if space-time was ever simple. So anyway, here's a diagram further down in the article, and it says, the simplest way to understand the fabric of space-time is to imagine a curved sheet of rubber that directs how everything in the universe moves. But the analogy isn't entirely accurate because space-time has four dimensions, while a sheet of rubber only has two. Okay, so imagine this too. Two neutron stars are moving towards each other, and they're going to collide, and they're going to create gravitational waves. So I believe Dr. Stairs here, she did something about that where two stars were rotating around each other. I'm not sure if they were both neutron stars, but they were, especially one of them was traveling in the bent space-time that the other one created. And I guess it's vice versa too. So that affected something about the signal and whether we can reach it because it would wobble. And I'm not sure if the axis was pointed towards us where it could be observed or measured or felt. So anyway, imagine two neutron stars or two black holes moving towards each other. And they're bent on colliding and creating havoc because that's what they were taught to do at little youngsters. They're saying, black hole, you will create havoc. So they're moving towards each other and space around them is totally bent. It's all weird. And then they start moving on the space-time that the other one created. So as they're moving towards each other, each of them is creating curves in space-time. So the opposite star will travel in the curved space-time that its partner made. So all of a sudden they'll move towards each other and bang, they'll collide and they'll merge. And the end product is a black hole that's not a total combination of the masses, because some of it gets, some of the mass, like four or five solar masses, gets used up in some kind of light show or some kind of fireworks or some kind of noise or some kind of energy. So anyway, they travel around each other's space-time. So if you have, this can get complicated, because if you have a universe of objects bending space-time around them, and we know that between us and the nearest star, it's Alpha Centauri, it's 4.3 light years. So there's probably a lot of the space-time between us that's not bent. But I don't know how far objects have to be apart before their interaction will be an interaction, which means will the space-time that an object, the space it bent, the space-time it bent, how close do they have to be? So you can imagine multiple objects kind of bending space. How is that resultant space-time going to be? I guess they'd have to be close enough together. But if you have two things, then all of a sudden, let's say you have three black holes, and then they're all bending space-time around them. How do the combination of the bending work? So how can you understand how space-time interactions work? Because here's the sun and the moon, or the Earth is like one astronomical unit, which is 150 million or billion kilometers. I'm not sure what it is. And then we're so far apart. Does that mean our curvature of space-time of the Earth somehow interacts with the curvature of the space-time of the sun? I'm not sure. So anyway, now I'm going to say what scientists still don't know. Despite its intricacy, relativity remains the best way to account for the physical phenomena we know about. Yet scientists know that their models are incomplete because relativity is still not fully reconciled with quantum mechanics, which explains the properties of subatomic particles with extreme precision, but does not incorporate the force of gravity. So that's another complicated thing. I guess I've heard for years now that scientists want to incorporate all this force into this one nice, elegant, beautiful force that can, or explanation that can explain everything. So something that I stress every show, I'm still amazed, for example, the Voyager spacecraft, they're way out there, out of the solar system. And scientists built models before the Voyagers went out, and a lot of the findings of the Voyagers confirmed these models, but some of the models they had to refine because they've never been there before. So now this is typical of something like physics or astronomy. There's so much that they know, but there's still so much they don't know. So how do you combine all these intricacies, not just with space-time, but here it says, how do you, one force of gravity, how do you explain the properties of subatomic particle with extreme precision, but when you do that, you're not incorporating the force of gravity. So how can you reconcile quantum mechanics and gravity? The scientists have not done that yet. Who knows what genius, it's not going to be me, I can tell you that, is going to discover that. Okay, quantum mechanics rests on the fact that tiny bits making up the universe are discrete or quantized. So photons, the particles that make up light, are like little chunks of light that come in distinct packets, photons. So I guess when they, the Lyman series, or what's it called, the Lyman series of lights, who discovered that? There was a mathematician who taught at a girls' school. He taught math, and he finally got the spectrum of hydrogen. He got it into an equation that became workable. And when they saw that, they said, okay, light has discrete properties. So for example, a photon can have a certain wavelength, and then it jumps to another level and it has a different wavelength. It's absorbed a certain amount of energy. So things in quantum mechanics are described by discrete or quantized theories of how things, energy is emitted. So quantum mechanic rests on the fact, okay, I read that before. Some theories have speculated, I'll read it again because I talked and I know I've mixed everybody up, so I've got to unmix everybody by reading the article. So quantum mechanics rests on the fact that tiny bits making up the universe are discrete or quantized. So for example, if I take a staircase, walk upstairs, then I'm going up and up and up and down and down and down. Now that's not quantized. But if I take an elevator, I go from first floor to second floor to third floor. So the elevator does not stop on floor 2.1 or 3.6. It stops on floor 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So in a way, that's what quantized means. It's like only certain levels of energies are allowed, and that's quantum mechanics. So photons are like little chunks of light that comes in distinct packets with certain amount of energies or certain wavelengths. Some theorists have speculated that perhaps space-time itself also comes in these quantized chunks, helping to bridge relativity and quantum mechanics. So again, this is another difficult thing that we're dealing with here. Who knows? And a lot of articles I read, they say there's a big question. Is this the answer to this? And then at the end, they say, well, we don't know. So they go through all this time and then they say, well, we're not sure. So they tease me and then they drop me. So basically I'm unsatisfied when that happens. So I don't like those kind of articles. But here it's just saying that quantum mechanics is so complex. Relativity is so complex. Gravity is so complex. So basically Einstein said, space-time is gravity. Relativity is gravity, I guess. I don't want to say it the wrong way, but anyway. So they're trying to combine the two, and they're not having, maybe they will one day. Maybe they'll understand how to do fusion on Earth, and that would be wonderful. But anyway, some theorists have speculated that space-time also comes in quantized chunks, helping to bridge relativity and quantum mechanics. Researchers at the European Space Agency have proposed the Gamma Ray Astronomy International Laboratory for Quantum Exploration of Space. Now that's a big name. Space-time mission. So it's called GRAIL Quest, which would fly around our planet and make ultra-accurate measurements of distance, of distant powerful explosion called gamma ray bursts, that could reveal the up-close nature of space-time. Such a mission wouldn't launch for at least a decade and a half, but if it did, it would perhaps help solve some of the biggest mysteries remaining in physics. So I guess every science has its mysteries and there's more discoveries to be made. But again, if you think in the future, if let's say this is a weird proposal, but let's say it's learned how to master space-time. So what does that mean anyway, but how to work with space-time? And when the quantum theories came out in the early 1900s, they were harnessed later to give us lots of microelectronics and stuff. So some of this stuff comes out. It takes a century for it to be useful. So you know what? I love this article because it's a cool thing. And it's just mind-bending. That's the only way to put it. So here's another article that says, Google's quantum computer just aced an impossible test. So there's all these scientists who somehow can bend their minds enough to make these theories that other of us could not understand. So when I come back, I'm going to talk more about funky stuff like space-time, and not just space-time. I'll talk about like some other stuff, but I'm going to do this now. I am going to talk more, a little bit more about space-time in another article, and then we'll have more fun. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Don't just live for the weekends anymore. Live for Thursdays when there's AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Marco. You're in the bright lights in the big city in Vancouver listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. But there's something about Saturday night. You can't say what you won't do, cause you know that you're just mine. I'm alive this evening. It was love at first sight. Of this Saturday and every Saturday for the rest of my life.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
They wish and I wish and I wish and I wish and they wish and on me. Yeah. I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me. I don't wanna die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wishing on me. Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They gon' tell the story, shit was different with me. God's plan.
God's plan with my radio God's show, plan. AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Sometimes I won't, yeah. I feel good, sometimes I don't, hey, yeah. I finesse down Western Road, hey, next. Might go down to G-O-D, yeah, wait. Yeah. I go hard on Southside G, yeah, wait. Yeah. I make sure that Northside E. And still. Yeah.
I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful.
You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Drake and Marco at UBC.
You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't wanna die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wishing on me. Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They gon' tell the story, shit was different with me. God's plan, God's plan. I hold back, sometimes I won't, yeah. I feel good, sometimes I don't, like, no. I finesse down Western Road, like, next. Might go down to G-O-D, yeah, wait. I go hard on Southside G, yeah, wait. I make sure that Northside E. And still.
Hello, this is Marco. Welcome back. I was waiting for that big horn. It didn't come. So I guess I cut it off, and I shouldn't have. But I love that big horn. Okay, so there's our wonderful Drake. Now there's Newton's Laws of Motion I was looking at. So it says, Newton was one of the most influential scientists of time. His ideas became the basis of modern physics. So he built upon the ideas put forth from the works of previous scientists like Galileo and Aristotle, and was able to prove some ideas that had only been theories in the past. He studied optics, astronomy, and math. He invented calculus, and German mathematician Gottfried Leibniz is also credited with developing independently at about the same time. So Newton is perhaps best known for his work in studying gravity and the motion of planets. So when you're in physics, you learn Newton's laws first, and they're amazing. So he really, I think, took a long time to formulate his ideas, and just that he could formulate such intricate things, and they've been proven over time. It's just great. Urged on by astronomer Edmund Halley, after admitting he had lost his proof of elliptical orbits a few years prior, Newton published his laws in 1687 in his seminal work Philosophia Naturalis Principia Mathematica, in which he formulated a description of how massive bodies move under the influence of external forces. In formulating the three laws, Newton simplified his treatment of massive bodies by considering them to be mere mathematical points with no size or rotation. So how these theorists can invent these things, amazing. Okay, here's an article that says, giant black hole at the center of our galaxy may have a friend. That seems interesting, but I'm going to keep going on space-time because it was so cool to read about space-time. So now I'm going to read another article. Ripples in space-time could reveal the shape of wormholes. So let's read a few minutes about this. Wormholes, yawning gateways that could theoretically connect distance points in space-time, are usually illustrated as gaping gravity wells linked by a narrow tunnel, but their precise shape has been unknown. So this article is on Live Science. It's called Ripples in Space-Time Could Reveal the Shape of Wormholes by Mindy Weisberger, November 7th, 2018. But their precise shape has been unknown. Now, however, a physicist in Russia has devised the method to measure the shape of symmetric wormholes, even though they have not been proven to exist, based on the way the objects may affect light and gravity. In theory, transversible wormholes, or four-dimensional portals through space-time, might work something like this. At one end, the irresistible pull of a black hole would suck matter into a tunnel connected at the other end to a white hole, which would spit matter out at a location far away from the material's point of origin in space and time. Though scientists have observed evidence of black holes in the universe, white holes have never been found. So these are portals in space, portals that black holes create, and white holes are at the other end. And you know, if you go to Pizza, they got a pizza portal now. So I don't know if that's the same thing. You walk in the store and your pizza's there ready for it. It's called Pizza Portal. So is this the same? Is this a black hole portal and Pizza, Little Caesars Pizza? Maybe that's our secret. We go to Little Caesars, We go to their pizza portal, and we go to another universe. Now that's something I'm going to try later. Okay, so now, however, a physicist in Russia devised a method to measure the shape of symmetric wormholes. In theory, transversible wormholes are four-dimensional portals through space-time. Might work something like this. Oh, I said that. The black hole pulls one way and spits things out at the other end through a white hole. And wormholes and the possibility of interstellar travel, they suggest, thus remain unproven, though Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity leaves room for the object's existence. However, even though wormholes may or may not exist, scientists do know a lot about the behavior of light and gravitational waves. The latter are the ripples in space-time that swirl around massive objects such as black bodies. So I know if I go to Pizza Pizza tonight, Little Caesars, I'm going to have a massive object, and pizza's going to be swirling around in there because I'm going to go to the pizza portal. And if I don't come back, that means I've gone to another universe with my pizza. So it was nice knowing you if I don't come back, but I think I will. So it says here, wormholes may or may not exist, but scientists do know a lot about the behavior of light and gravitational waves. One wormhole property that could be observed, albeit indirectly, is a redshift in the light near the object. Redshifting is a decrease in the frequency of light waves as they travel away from an object, resulting in a shift to the red part of the spectrum. If you know how light around a potential wormhole is redshifted, you can then use the theories of gravitational waves or how they oscillate to predict the symmetric wormhole shape. And that's it. So I'm going to go now. Thank you for listening. I had a great time this year. It was fun doing this astronomy talk show. And like I said, if I don't come back, that means I went through Little Caesars pizza portal, just like the wormhole portal. So basically, I've been devoured by a pizza, by a wormhole in the pizza shop. So thank you for listening. Have a good new year. And we'll see you when I come back, whenever that is. And have a nice day.